Ready, Brad? Call to order the assembly meeting of the whole for Wednesday, October 19th, 2022. Can we have roll call, please?
Burnham.
Here.
Hilton.
Here.
Potter.
Here.
Bass.
Present by phone.
Henry.
Here.
Henson.
Here.
Mayor Kamada.
Present by phone.
All members present. Quorum's established.
Thank you. We will start with a review of proposed FY23 municipal budget enterprise funds. A clinic fund. We have the executive director here. Would you like to present that at the microphone on the record, please?
I seem to be sitting in this chair, always starting off saying, please forgive me, but this is my first run at this. So if I mess up, please let me know. I think belatedly on my part, I sent Mr. Burnham our weekly update. Now I send a weekly update to the manager and to the chairman of the board. And y'all have a copy of this week's. It goes out tomorrow, but I think it speaks very well to the candor that we have at that and the level of transparency. And it gives this assembly the why of what our budget looks like. So I invite y'all to take a look at that at your leisure. If there's any questions that you have, Brad has 8 weeks prior to that. I certainly have those 8 weeks as well, as does Jeremy, the board chair, as to any why that goes on in the clinic. And it is for us to understand where the clinic needs to go. And it is an opportunity for Brad or Jeremy to step in and say, Thomas, the direction that you're heading is incorrect, or it is correct, and here's how I can help, or it in case Thomas gets run over by a bus or a train, the next person sitting in that desk has a roadmap as to where to go. That being the case, I will answer any questions that y'all have on our budget, or I'll walk through the budget. I mean, I've been living with this for a couple of weeks, so I'll be happy to do either way.
I think we have questions. Thank you, Deb.
I would like a walkthrough.
A walkthrough? Okay.
Sure. I'm walking through a revision that may not be your revision. The numbers are the same in the end. On the revenue side, we have the typical 330 grant that we have on a cycle is $1,345,412. We have two grants, the H8F, which is operations grant of $560,378, and the C8E grant, which is infrastructure and capital grant of $517,556 that are in 2022 and will carry over to 2023. We have operating income of net clinic income of $1.215 million for along with some change from other places that give us about a $2.6 million revenue right now, less the two grants we're carrying over. Those grants need to be tied to specific expenses. And I think it's important that this governing body understand that the expenses down below are what should be budgeted each year going forward. We just have $1.1 million on the side to help defray those expenses. I will go through line by line advertising. We're going to use nothing but Indeed going forward, as well as free services such as the Alaska Primary Care Association or HRSA. Computer support is just a product of each year of what we pay. Legal is a new item. We took this year's current expense, extrapolated it out through the rest of the year, and that turned out to be around $56,000. Insurance is a product of our share of it, I believe, the insurance. Administrative, $1,500, bank fees, shipping, postage. Shipping and postage went down substantially in that we now have a piece of equipment that we're not going to have to ship out some of the blood product. We can do those tests inside, as well as last year, we had some shipping and postage on some heavy items that were one-time items. So we eliminated those for next year. Billing expense is just a product of Athena. We pay a set fee each month. Employee payroll is a product of payroll. Health insurance is a product of payroll. Our equipment line is $21,000. Go back. If I'm running too quickly, if you want me to slow down, please let me know. I apologize. That equipment line can actually be zeroed out, and that could be applied to the C8E grant that we have of $517,000, but do not zero it out because next year that's going to be an expense. So that's why that's still in there. Repairs and maintenance, $18,500. Salaries, $464,648. Mid-level salaries of 300 and I believe that's right, 382,000. Medical assistance, office staff. These next two items, locum tenens and travel nurses. Our locum tenens, this is for three providers to complement the one nurse practitioner that we have employed. Locum tenens is far more expensive than employed, but the reality is in this world today in healthcare, we're not going to get an employed nurse practitioner or PA to come live here and call this place home. They're making too much money traveling. Now, if someone wants to come here and live here and make this place home, we will certainly employ them, but I'm budgeting for the worst, not the best. This puts four providers here every day for 365 days out of the year. What we are paying for is the opportunity to render care to this community 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days out of the year. There are slow times during the winter months where one might say, hey, Thomas, do we really need those four providers here? And the answer is you still have somebody on call, whether that call is made or not. So the burden of call still exists. A 1-in-4 rotation is an appropriate call rotation in healthcare. A 1-in-3 rotation will tend to burn your staff up. A 1-in-2 rotation is untenable. So that's why we have it budgeted for four providers. As of today, we have three providers. So I don't think on January 1, we will have four providers, but we're budgeting for the whole year. Travel nurses the same way. We're budgeting for one nurse to be here 365 days out of the year. During that May through October, we're budgeting for another nurse to come in during that season. And again, that is for somebody traveling in. Travel and training operations, that's for the whole operations staff. Travel and training, that's for the nurse practitioner RN. And that is typically the expense that we bear for them flying in, flying back home. Board training, you'll see in my note that goes out to Brad and Jeremy tomorrow. There's some opportunities coming up in April that I strongly encourage the assembly, the mayor, and our board of directors to consider, which is the Alaska Primary Care Association. They're having a retreat for board members, and it's a 3.5-day retreat, and they will cover topics that y'all may be familiar with, may not be familiar with, but sometimes hearing the same thing from different people makes a great deal more sense. So board training, we put in it, I believe it was $12,000. Utilities is, we just looked at the utilities for the year, or 8 months out of the year, divided it by 8 times 12. I apologize. Heather has done an extraordinary job. She gave us the detailed account, general ledger account from January through August. So we divided by 8 times 12. That's how we came up with these numbers. Going over to this second page for me, y'all are still on the first page. I'm not sure if there's anything extraordinary in here. Janitorial expenses, medical supplies, lab supplies, medical advisor. Our medical advisor, we increased substantially. Very pleased to announce that our medical advisor comes quarterly. He has agreed to come in early a couple of days quarterly and actually see patients and watch the throughput of your clinic. And that's Dr. Rosenfeld. So next year we're planning on him seeing patients in our clinic as well as being our medical advisor. Let's see, pharmacy supplies, bad debt, depreciation, OT, dental services is for me an opportunity. I think we would all agree that dental services are needed in this community. We used to have it. We lost it at COVID. I do not have a dental provider right now. I put a line item budget in there, but we are reaching out to 3 dentists in Juneau right now that our previous dentist said, hey, I know 2 of these dentists. They may be interested. The third dentist, I don't know, but he's a young dentist in this community and might be interested. Ultrasound, visiting providers, $1,000. Lease payments is for 4 rental properties. 3 of them we have on contract right now. The 4th we do not have on contract. But we have 4 providers. We're going to need 4 places. And I believe that covers about it. And we'll answer any questions.
Questions? Deb?
Thomas, oh, sorry.
Oh, hold on, Andrew. I'll get to you in just a second.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Stein. The C8E and H8F grant, we're kind of new on the radar, at least for me. Can you tell me more about those?
Yes, ma'am.
I think more specifically, if there's any restrictions on how the restrictions that come with those.
Thank you. Yes. We'll start with the H8F. That's the easiest one. That is for operations. So, $560,378 can go for the operations. Examples could be for the locum tenens. You could reduce it by $560,000. An example could be recruitment expense. You could courses expense to bring me here qualifies for that. The travel nurses qualifies for that. Why we didn't designate it to that is because the next year you still need to know that you need 3 providers here, you need 1.5 nurses here. So I want this assembly and the community to know this is what's needed, but you've already got 560,000 of that covered. Oh, I'm sorry. And the H or C8E is for infrastructure support and capital expenses. Your supply item equipment line 5150 could be eliminated. But this assembly and this community needs to know that there's equipment expenses. Items such as we're at the end of a life cycle for IT support. We have a server that needs to be replaced. I think that's $9,000. Computer expenses, that all could fall underneath the C8E, which is your equipment and capital expense of $517,000.
Thank you.
Mayor?
I don't have anything at this time.
Was that Sam then who?
Hey, we're on it.
Okay, go ahead, Sam.
I did real quickly. Hey, Thomas, I just the regarding the grants, the H8F grant, have we received that grant? Is that in the checkbook now?
Yes, sir. We have received that grant. We have consumed part of that grant already. We're just carrying, that's a residual that we're carrying forward.
Okay. And for the 330 grant, the 21 total budget shows 1.345 allocated, but then the activity was 2.2 million, almost $1 million increase. Can you explain that increase? And then do you expect that to happen this year again?
I'm going to try to, but I've got Heather that I'm looking out of the corner of my eye. I believe some of the grants before may have been rolled into the 330 line. This year is where we started segregating it out. Does that help, Sam? Did that make sense?
It does. Does that mean that the H8F grant then is not going to, we can expect not to see that large increase that we saw between 2021 total budget and 2021 total activity. We can expect not to see that gain. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That would be accurate. And I think some of that was ARPA funding as well. I'm looking at Heather. Is that no? Okay. Okay. That is correct.
Okay. All right. So we won't see that gain. Down when we go to expenses, let's see, I think it's just for general salaries. We saw an increase, basically a doubling of the salary increases from 2021. I think it's line 5170. Is that increase in staff? Is that increase in pay? Why that increase?
That's me. The 5170 is the dispensary tech, IT tech, the executive director, and some allocation to public works. There's four components in that. My salary, in complete transparency, is around $1,400 a day, and it is roughly $326,000 a year. That is without PERS or any benefits other than the required Medicare and those funds taking out.
Okay, thank you.
Now, I do want to address my salary as well, because this is my moment here and maybe my last one. Come on, that was funny. The compensation for the executive director is based on fair market value, and it's not for fair market value of Skagway, Alaska. It's for fair market value for Region 10, which Alaska is one of them. And in case you hadn't picked it up, I'm not from Region 10. And so it's fair market value to be able to recruit nationwide to bring you presumably the caliber that is sitting in front of you right now. So please recognize that I know that's an extraordinarily high amount, especially for communities, but you're recruiting fair market value to bring someone in to do the job. It would be the same in every other community that you go to. And with PERS taken out, that's why my rate's high.
Thomas, one more question, and I guess it comes down to line 5174. Again, when we're talking about the locum tenens, we just see that, you know, that very large increase, and you explained it to us. But again, these are going to be, you're talking about three new positions. Is that correct? Is that the reason for the cost increase for those locum full-time positions? Can you explain that one more time? Just explain that number.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. I think in prior years, we had it budgeted as some employee. And the reality is we're not going to get a provider, a nurse practitioner, or a PA to move to Skagway, Alaska at a lower rate than what they can do riding the circuit. The compensation for riding the circuit is pretty good business. And they, a nurse practitioner or a PA will come to us and they will spend a month, 2 months, 3 months, and then they will go somewhere else. This is the actual rate of our contracts with nurse practitioners and PAs as if they were here every day, three of them here every day, 365 days out of the year. The reality is it's a carousel almost. And we have three providers right now. So if we were in the, if this budget was in January, you would be saving some nurse provider rate. The expense would not be incurred, but we would be actively recruiting for that fourth provider to come in.
So Thomas, in just kind of in layman's terms, so the difference between the $143,000 that was shown in 2021 versus the $669,000 that we're budgeting for this year, that's not an increase in personnel. That's an increase in cost for those personnel. Is that correct?
It's increasing cost and it's an increase in personnel. I think we budgeted last year some providers, but we were unable to hire providers, and we went extraordinarily high in locum tenens. And so this year we went extraordinarily high in locum tenens because that's the reality of what we're facing today.
And it's unfortunate, but it seems like what we have to do. Okay. Thanks, Thomas, for your information.
Yes, sir. And I would add that we have been very fortunate thus far in the locum tenens that we've had have been very quality locum tenens. And this community is easy to sell once you're here. They are very favorably impressed. And so you will see these same locum tenens come back. There's going to be a consistency in the care that's being rendered. Bill Weiss, whom we've mentioned before, has agreed, and the attorneys will have in their hands shortly, his request to be here for 3 months. He wants to be here February, March, and April, off June, July, and August, back September, October, November. He's coming back at 3 month blocks. There are other providers who have been through here already have said, Thomas, I would like to do 1 month on, 1 month off, 1 month on, 1 month off. And so we will see the same consistency throughout the year. And that's what we're building, is probably a cadre of 4 to 6 nurse practitioners or PAs who will be here, but just not for 365 days.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
It's on, you got a pretty significant reduction in the line items, almost 50% line item reduction on mid-level salaries, and then about a 34% reduction in health insurance. Can you explain those two line items and why there's such a large reduction in the expense?
I would think, I'm going to look at Heather, and please forgive me, but I would think on the mid-level salaries, we had them as employees, and the line item of the insurances is a product of employment. They're now shift from employees to locum tenens where we don't pay insurance.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Jay.
Thank you. Just a little side note. You said that none of the nurses are making a lot of money being locums. I just wanted to mention that I had a conversation with someone who was here for a few months, and they were in the service industry, and her friend, an operating nurse and a nurse practitioner, and they both were very interested in coming back up here and actually living here. And I understand you're planning for the worst, and that's great. And this, they didn't lease an apartment from me or anything, so I don't know that they're coming back, but I just wanted to throw that out there that it's just like you said, they come here, they like the town, and then they they want to stay.
I concur, sir. Once you get somebody here, it's an easy sell, a very easy sell. And we're not shy about being fair market value. So I want to say to this assembly, the revenue side is very conservative. The expense side is very generous. I want to be honest and say that these expenses are what we have to see going forward, but you have $1.1 million out there that we're going to lower these expenses by and try to be very good stewards and knock it out of the park. So when you see it month in and month out, that you'll pat Brad on the back and say, you're doing a great job over there. Thank you.
Any other questions? Brad? I guess I would just say I have concerns about, you know, depending on locums as a staffing mechanism, having had to sign, you know, every time, it's twice when the mayor is out of town, short term, you know, headhunting staffing firms. It's not a lot of confidence and stability. And, you know, if it's something where we can line them up, I mean, I get your parallel of showing, you know, saying they're seasonal, and we have that situation throughout Skagway of seasonal people. But, you know, if it were a more routine, like 3 month, three on, whatever you just said, you know, and then that kind of thing, such as other, you know, places on the slope or whatever. But, you know, the crisis of having staffing firms to fill seats immediately is not something I ever feel comfortable with. And, you know, seeing how this swings where, you know, we're having reductions in salaries and massive industrial, you know, increases in locums, you know, perhaps that is the way the medical field works now. We have had people live here for long term. Who were part of the community, their kids went to school here, graduated from here. I don't know that I agree that that's the way it is, the way you phrase it. I think we would all like to see people who are entrenched in the town, own homes here, stay here, rather than, you know, people who are in and out all the time. I don't know that I accept that as the new normal.
Thank you. The last two people that we have engaged, last three people, none of them have been through a headhunter. We've recruited them ourselves. So we're real pleased about that. And I agree wholeheartedly on that. You know, we're not saying, no, you can't come live here. If you want to come live here, I'm going to do everything I can to make it easy for you to come live here. I agree. Having our own, we had a conversation with, I believe, a lady named Bridget, who's been here since 2010, growing up here each summer. She's in PA school, wanting to go to PA school, and has asked to shadow us this coming summer when she's back. So we're growing our own, but that's a long range goal, and it's not a light switch. It doesn't happen overnight. You got to do it now with the students who are here now in order to get them 10 years down the road.
But one quick question.
I'm sorry.
Quick question.
Go ahead.
Mr. Steiner, you'd mentioned that I think it was that 330 operations the 8HF operations grant. Am I correct? That's being carried over from the previous year?
Yes, sir.
So I guess my question is, where my concern is with this budget, is that money spent this year, is that going to be a $560,000 shortfall in next year's budget? How does that work?
On my budget, I had that 560 out. Heather and had it in because she and I had a conversation at the very last to say if she can tie it to a direct expense, and we should put it in as revenue, and then we'll have revenue and expense. The short answer is You're correct in saying that once we exhaust that, it doesn't replenish. The long answer is in my early note to Brad and to Jeremy that you have, is that we got $1.1 million in grant funding and we didn't expend any effort in doing that. We will expend effort in tracking down grants, but to budget the potential success of grant opportunities would be irresponsible.
Okay, so, you know, I see a 16% increase. I mean, just keeping it really simple. You have next year, you're obviously going to have increases in costs and then potentially over $500,000 shortfall next year. Are we looking at a situation where during the next fiscal year, we're instead of a $4.5 million budget, we're looking at maybe a $5.5 million budget, or is that impossible to speculate?
I'm going to say impossible to speculate. But I think it's, I think that concern I've raised in my note to Brad and to Jeremy. And so it's in your inbox and you can probably look at my logic and say, hey, Thomas, I follow your logic. I don't agree with it. Or, hey, Thomas, I don't follow your logic. And, but I think there's always going to be a line item that says, Dahl Clinic somewhere in between the neighborhood of a tax transfer of $500,000 to $750,000. Is there going to be a draw on that? If you ask me, I think the answer is no, because I think there's available resources to reach that delta. And I think it comes from clinic operations. This is where we've shot ourselves in the foot. We're at $1.2 million this year. I think that's a pretty conservative number, but I think it's going to take a lot of work. I think next year we're probably looking at 1.5. I think on grant writing, I think if we can get $1 million without working very hard at it, I don't see why we can't do that again year after year after year after year ad nauseum, as long as there are grants out there. But to budget on the potential of a grant being out there and budget on the potential that we're going to get that grant again would be irresponsible.
No, I totally agreed. You know, I think we need to be very clear here with the public, and correct me if I'm wrong, Manager Ryan, but we have to fund this out of sales tax, and that is a pretty limited fund. I think it's like $5.5 million. So, you know, you look at a 16% increase after a pandemic, and I can say that that's relatively reasonable. But then you add another, you know, close to 600,000 to that, and then next year's increases. Are we going to be in a position where we're tapping into 30, 40, 50% of our sales tax revenue for the clinic? Because if we are, just to be very clear, the cuts are going to have to come from other places that we put that income out. So I'm not directing that at you, Mr. Steiner. I'm just making the public aware of how this funding works.
Absolutely. I would also say in our clinic revenue that we're basing it off of last year's volume. I think the you and the assembly and the manager have done extraordinarily great job in ensuring that the boats will show back up. I'm not budgeting any increase in any revenue from any increase or return of volume from the boats.
Anything else, Mayor?
That's it for me. Thank you.
Any other questions from the assembly? Thank you, Mr. Steiner.
No, thank y'all.
Okay. Moving on to B, Solid Waste Fund. Director Ames, would you care to come up and present this budget? Or, okay. Thank you, Brad.
It's pretty much a standard budget. We didn't put a lot of bells and whistles except for a couple of items. So I want to point out there's an increase in rates that's been, you know, it's standard. That's what we're doing. It's, you know, 9.5% increase in garbage rates. We're trying to catch up. Additionally, in the revenue line, we added 10% based on what we might see in cruise ships next year. We're at, you know, we're scheduled to see a much larger increase, but we're being very conservative on what we might see for next year. As you slide down, there's really nothing that stands out in any of these lines. They're pretty much standard operational funds until you get down to line 5162, materials and supplies, with bear cans in there. So if the assembly wants to move forward with that, that's part of this budget. It's in there right now. I think if we're going to do that, we need to have a serious consideration about how we're going to pay for those, right? I have, and Director Ames and I have talked about, maybe it's a $5 a quarter can fee just perpetually added to the garbage rates. And then we always have a fund to replace these cans as they go. Everybody gets them at no expense. The people that have bought bear cans, we'd have to come up with a program to reimburse them for them because they've gone and done the right thing. We don't want to punish them for having a, you know, $240 garbage can. But this way we'd have standard cans, it'd be bear cans, and it could be an easy way to help manage the bear problem. So it's in there. I'm looking for feedback on whether you want to move forward with that or not this year. As you slide down, you'll also see a pretty good line in capital outlay. We just have some deferred maintenance items we need to replace. I believe we got a Bobcat in there. It's worn out, needs to happen. And a fire pump, again, important. And then that is really what you have for excitement in the garbage and solid waste fund. Did I miss anything, Tyson? Thoughts on that?
So in terms of materials and supplies, we need to come up with a policy if we do adopt that for bear-proof cans and how that goes into the utility quarterly bill.
That'd be my recommendation. I think something low, you know, something, you know, like I suggested, $5 a quarter. It just happens. It's not a lot of money. And then you're always assigned that you just get a can when you sign up for service. And it depends on what size can you need. And you get one and we just move on from there. And we just have to offset that expense.
Noted. The chair of Public Works will get with the director of Public Works and work on that.
Other questions, thoughts?
Brad, Sam here. I assume this will probably apply to the rest of the budget. When we look at the revenue for this year, the manager's budget, so $670,000, obviously a big increase for 2021. I wish I could see 2019's budget on here to have it something more to reference, but it, basically the increase is what you're seeing is just increased usage by, you know, with more ships in town. Is that the difference between the budget numbers there?
Not completely. There's a 9.5% increase in rates that goes into effect for 2023. And then we used a 10% increase in volume, essentially, that would generate revenue. So you can look at that. We also did look back at 2019, or Heather did, and it seems like we're going to be right in line with that, with the increased rates. So I think
we've got the increased rates coming next year. We've got the 9.5%, and then we may also have this $5 or some amount per can if we do the new bear cans. Probably for, you know, if it's a $240 can at $5 a quarter, and we're going to pay for them for, that'll just pretty much be an existing item, line item on everyone's bill. Does that seem correct?
It does. You got the $5 a quarter per can. It's just to offset some of that expense. We hope these cans have a long life because they're going to have to when you got a $240 can and you're paying $5 a quarter. But we don't also want to overburden people with these cans either.
Well, they have the option to choose the cans or not. Well, I guess that's probably a conversation for Public Works Committee. So thank you.
Okay. So Manager Ryan, we hired a full-time second full-time garbage person, which we had struggled to do for a while. So that's why the salaries have gone up, Zedak. Is that right?
That is correct.
Can you detail a little bit how we're going on it's a 51%, well, it's close to 51% increase. I'm seeing from 22 total budget. And aside from bear cans, one salaried position, and you know, the pay increase, I'm not understanding that, especially seeing year to date activity is, you know, under 700,000. So maybe you can explain that to me a little bit better, how that has jumped so far up there, knowing that year to date, you know, with 2 months, you know, give or take, left in the calendar year, we're haven't crossed 700,000, and you know, you're looking at a substantial increase from what was budgeted in 22. When I'm pretty sure we budgeted for that extra garbage man already. I mean, I know we've across the board.
We didn't get the extra garbage man all through 22, though, right? We didn't get him hired for the entire year. Is that what you're asking me?
I'm asking about a 51% increase from 2022, when at this point we have under 700,000 in expenses.
Well, I have to do the math here. So that's 200,000. You'd be down to 1 million. And let me look at these lines that are up considerably. What do you got, Tyson?
A few things have gone up. The contractual line went up. That's mostly construction debris. We added $10,000 we added an engineering line for $10,000, just to cover things that come up throughout the year that require small engineering. Recycle went up $25,000, because now we're shipping all of our scrap. You know, so recycles, cardboard, scrap metal, vehicles, e-waste, and also included in that line item is recycling some of our waste asphalt and concrete to make a usable product. The Bobcat in there and the fire pump added, you know, that's 120,000 right there.
So utilities,
travel training, we increased it to 10,000 because we're going to have to send somebody out for CDL training. Pay increases, and then the big one is the bear proof cans. The 200.
Also, it appears that utilities hasn't been built out all the way yet. If you're looking at activity versus, you know, you got 90,000 versus 150.
E-waste is higher than it was last year too.
Hazardous waste must but not be built out all the way.
That's a hazardous waste. Yeah, hazardous waste. We'll see another 30,000 on that. That 60,000 was based on what we spent this year on hazardous waste. I think all those added up is what you're seeing.
Dan, go ahead.
No, I can, yeah, between the cash outlay for equipment, contractual, and the bears, the bear cans, you're 400 and change, and you're out around 500. So, yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions about the solid waste fund? Reba.
Not so much a question, as though I do support keeping the line item for the bear cans in there. And I look forward to Public Works discussing a way to work that out to make it feasible and affordable for everyone. We've had a bear problem in this community ever since I've moved here. And this is no means going to solve it, but it definitely is a step in the right direction. And I think it's about time that we take it.
Deb?
Bear has become like my pool lately, and I couldn't agree more. How many, can you refresh my memory? What is the cost of the bear cans per can-ish? Because I know there's different size. Is it going to be one size? You're going to be ordering multiple sizes?
Three different sizes. There's a 32-gallon, 64-gallon, and 96-gallon, and I believe the 96 is around $300 a can, and the 64 is 280, and the 32, I believe, is around 240.
Anything else, Deb? Okay, thank you. Okay, now we're moving on to C, Water Sewer Fund.
So water sewer fund is again, it's straight up operational. We show less of an increase in revenue because there's no rate increase. And so you can see a slightly smaller increase in revenue there. So you know it goes from 488 to 512, not much of an increase. When you slide down, we stayed pretty close on most things. One of the things you'll see, we haven't spent out the repairs and maintenance budget, but we need to, you know, we're keeping it high. We need a new bunch of chemicals. In the past, we'd over-ordered chemicals, and so we've been riding those out. So this next year, we're going to have to order chemicals. So we'll be up in that 185 range again. If you slide down to the capital outlay, that is, I believe you had in there a number of things. You had, what do you have in there? A screw pump, sewer can?
The screw conveyor for our sludge press. It recently broke. We welded it together. So that's what we're using right now, is a patched one. So we need to replace that. We need to order a spare chemical feed pump for the alum chemical, and a sewer cam for small diameter pipe, because our sewer cam only does larger mainline pipe. That's the capital outlay increase.
Other than that, there's nothing really fancy in this one. Any questions on it?
I have no questions. Good job, sewer plant.
Cody, you might as well come out.
Okay. Moving on to the port fund.
This is the wild ride. This is notes for it. I think in general, what we did for the port in revenue is we looked at the number of passengers projected to be here in 23. We then did a whole bunch of hoops and jumping around and trying to decide on numbers. And we came up with about 60% again. That's what we budgeted for last year. 60% puts us at about 250,000 passengers next year. If we get the alternative mooring plan in place and everything goes swimmingly, I think we'll see a lot more than that. But we want to be conservative on that. So you can see in your revenues, you've got your vessel impact fee. That represents about a 60% of what is projected to be here in 2023. Those passengers are split evenly between the White Pass docks and the municipality docks. And that vessel impact fee is then allocated out or calculated that way. We also assumed that everybody was going to pay the vessel impact fee on time. So while they're $850 and $350, if they pay within 30 days, we get 8 and 3. So that was the math for that. If you slide down and then you look at dockage, again, we reduced the number of ships to get to that and then split them for dockage. We don't get dockage on the White Pass docks, obviously. And so that's what we would see on our portion of the docks with a reduced number relative to what is actually scheduled. And I believe we didn't use dockage for the industry side in this one. While there will be some of that, I think we took most of that out. Just because it's a smaller amount and we're trying to be conservative. If you look at wharfage, that's primarily fuel flow through. So we took, in the past, they've pumped through about 23 million gallons. We bumped it down to 20 million gallons, looked at the tariff document, which is 0.021, and used a lower percentage of that to get to the 315. We didn't calculate wharfage yet for AML in there. So we've left it at that. We're still negotiating leases, and how those leases fall out will be important and impact how the wharfage is calculated. We made some assumption on fuel, but we didn't do it for AMI. So that will change depending on how those lease negotiations fall out. Security was a calculation of the $600 fee primarily that would be paid by the cruise ships and the tariff document. Fresh water, that'll get allocated back out. Yeah, 70,000 comes in, but it goes out. It doesn't stay in the port because it goes to the enterprise fund, the water fund. If you look down at parking permits, that was the tariff document. We got some estimates from the tourism department on how many of those will be. Legislative grants, that's just grant money that's carried over as we complete projects down on the port. We're using legislative grant funds, and so that's what that is there. Again, that'll get paid out into projects that we're doing, and we already have those grants. And then leases, that's an estimate of what we might get from the Upland leases, and that's based on 3/4 of a year. And you know, it really is a big guess right now because we're in the middle of negotiating those leases. So we had to make some estimations. We kept it very conservative, and used 3/4 of a year to calculate that. So in total, we have about nearly $7 million worth of revenue in the port fund. This is where it gets, where's that sheet? Which one is that? So I can go through all of these and tell you what we think they are for, or what we built them on. So we have contractual, about $150,000 in contractual just as a holding place for different things that are going to happen down there. We also have $400,000 for Cox Environmental, who's going to complete the Upland investigations for us down there. And we're assuming most of that will get paid out after the first of the year. It's underway, but most of her expenses come from the lab analysis. And so we think about half of that contract's going to come out next year. Advertising is pretty straightforward. Computer supports and allocation. Engineering, do we have anything specific for that? Or is that just a holding place because we think we're going to have a number of items, small engineering items down with the port, so about $100,000. Legal, again, we're guessing, but we can look back and say, we spend a lot right now to get the port straightened out and agreements, and I don't think that's going to stop anytime soon. Insurance, administrative, payroll. You can see that we have payroll expense in there, health insurance expense. We're hoping that with it, so as far as staff goes, we have the port director, we have the administrative assistant. We're hoping to have a couple of groundskeepers down there to spruce things up and potentially another person for facilities down there. Groundskeepers would obviously be seasonal, but we really want to go spruce things up. Repairs and maintenance, we got $150,000 in there. We assume there's going to be a bunch of just things we need to make happen down there. Buy barricades, spruce things up. What else? Garbage cans, benches. There's a number of things in there that are listed. So we need a pretty good line item for that. Travel and training, we're continuing that line across. There's sea trade, there's simulations, you name it. There's a lot of travel associated with the port at this point. Utilities, janitorial, it's going to be a bit to have it down there. We got the restrooms to keep clean. We got more and more people. Let's hope we got lots more people down there. Environmental compliance, $200,000. Where is that one at? LGLR grant funded. What is that one? Can't remember that one. Can't remember what the LGR, I got a note for it. ARPA funds to help pay for the environment. So we had ARPA in there allocated. We had to put in what we were going to spend ARPA for at one point. So that'll help cover some of the Cox environmental expenses, mostly lab. So we got 400 and 200, total 600. Marketing, office supplies, dues, entertainment. Water, you can see that goes back out to the water department. PILT. So in code, we can, instead of paying taxes, we can make a payment in lieu of taxes to ourselves, to the general fund. We have to substantiate how we're doing that. So we looked at what was being paid to us for current properties down there. And there's also large properties down there that we don't have assessments on that are ours. And so that payment in lieu of taxes can go back to the general fund. So you see that 460,000. I think that's very conservative on what it could be, but we need to establish a process and have it written out about how we allocate that and why. So that just goes to the general fund. Finally, we have $2 million in bond. So that's the assumption that we're going to have a bond payment from our revenue bond and $2 million. I think by the time they get issues, we're being very cautious in that. Our initial investigation was at $25 million. We'd see a $1.5 million payment in a year. We're looking at $30 million, but this is for three quarters of a year. So I think two hopefully is sufficient there. Then these get harder to explain because they're, if you go all the way down to the transfers, you got 8.5 million. That's in the capital funds. That's seven and a half of that would be if the Yukon government funds the build out for the Marine Services platform. That would be about half a year's worth of construction on that. Another million and a half, I believe, would be from, I gotta look, but I think that's from rockslide mitigation. And then you have $23 million in bond revenue. And then you have $33 million going out to the capital projects list, which we will be talking about next Wednesday. In the end, you're down there, you're in the black at about $323,000. We tried to keep the revenues conservative. We did look at three ships coming in, and that does change things a bit. I think the good thing about this budget is a lot of these expenses can be held off on if for some reason we had to go to three ships. So a huge number of these expenses don't have to happen, but they're there to make the port better and, you know, more functional and look better if we're running a full four ships and getting our projected revenue.
Can you repeat what you said, the estimated, or what your estimated number of passengers, which you're basing this upon?
750,000 passengers, to give you an easy number. It's 59% of the 1.26 million that were scheduled, that you see on the schedule if you looked at the ship capacity for 2023.
Questions? I do have one question here. With security, it was my understanding that that security is paid for directly to CLIA and along with the longshoremen, et cetera. And I'm curious as to how security shakes out with
what,
that.
What we would like to do is have the ships run their own security through their port managers, right? But there is still a flat fee that you pay in the tariff document. If you come twice, that maxes out at $600 a month. Do I have that correct? So that's a flat fee for security that they pay. The actual cost of security they would pay if they wanted us to run it, it would be that $600 plus actual costs, because it's going to cost more than that.
That's $600 per ship, you're saying?
In a month. So if they come 10 times, they don't pay more than $600 in that month.
Sam, Mayor, any questions?
No, not at this time. Nope.
None for me.
Okay. This is a whole new ride, I think, as you just said, to introduce this. And I like that you're estimating on the low side so that we can be pleasantly surprised when we surpass those projections. Moving on to the harbor fund.
So the small boat harbor fund, a lot of it stays the same. I'll hit the highlighted ones. Annual mortgage is very similar to what it usually is. When you get down to the lease and rental, that's the first one. of any dollar mark that starts to go up significantly, and that's because we have a new lease agreement signed with the business down there, and so we're just accounting for that. That's already known. And then if you get to commercial user fees, that one has gone up massively, right? So it's $593,000. We've collected about $45,000 this year. So when the fast ferry comes in and out, those people get on, they pay $1.04. They get off, you know, they get on and go to Haines, they pay $1.04. They come back, they pay $1.04. With the potential of lightering 375,000 people through the small boat harbor, we didn't charge that last year, but only because we were, or this year, I should say, only because we were desperately trying to figure out how to make it happen this year. So that fee will get allocated this year to those tendering vessels. So that's $2.08 round trip. We took 60% of 375, so half the people of 750,000 going to the railroad docks, reduced that by 60% because we did hear a number of people lament that people were not getting off the boat if they had to tender. So 60% at 375 gives you a substantial increase in that commercial user fee, that $2.08 that would be collected. So that's why you see that big increase there. Otherwise, there is not. Is there anything else in here that should be highlighted? There really isn't anything else here. It's pretty much standard operation after that. Questions?
Much different budget from the small boat harbor we've seen in the past, but that makes sense with the tendering that we will see substantial increases in revenue from there.
Could I just add one thing around?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just would say we didn't do anything dramatic. We didn't do anything with that anticipating that revenue because it's such an unknown right now. So you see, you know, we're way, you know, in the black at 465. We're not like, oh, trying to do something with that because everything is still up in the air and what we're going to do down there.
And the cruise lines are aware that we're going to be charging those fees for tendering?
I think we got to reach out and make sure they're aware we're going to charge this year.
Okay. Any questions? Sam, Mayor, any questions?
No questions. When I first saw that line item, though, I thought, oh, we need to expand the boat harbor quickly since we're making $465,000. But no, it's. I'm glad to hear that that revenue stream is going to be kind of held back on actual usage until we realize it. I think that's a good strategy. So no questions.
None for me either.
Thank you. Okay, no further questions. Thank you for those budget presentations. Brings us to mayor and assembly discussion items. Jay.
I guess the pool's on the next budget.
Thank you. Deb.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. It's pretty exciting to look at this port budget and see our revenue is going from $127,200 a year to approaching $7 million. Obviously, it comes with expenses, but it's a really exciting time for us.
Reba?
$365,000 a year we're paying you now. That's your salary, $360,000 a year. It's shocking. And at some point, I won't be able to sign up on the check runs because I can't support that. I don't think that's sustainable for our community. I just want to go on record as saying that now. So when that day comes, people will know why, and I will state it again, because that's just a little part. You also have a per diem, your housing, your car, your travel back and forth, plus all the other expenses that we're giving out to Coors, which adds up significantly to probably what, a half a million a year? Do you know offhand? $500,000 a year for Coors, and this is supposed to be a Band-Aid to get us to a place in our community that we can even, for me, just even use the clinic, because I don't feel like we're quite there yet. So at some point, I won't be supporting this. I just can't. I don't think it's something that we can sustain in this community, and it's frightening, but we really do need to do better than this.
Thank you. Dan.
Well, looking at these items, and as we go through them line by line, which it's good to have a comprehensive analysis, give and take from the departments and so forth. But bottom line to a lot of this, we got into the discussion a little bit at the last budget meeting when we talked about mill rates and buying down the mill rate to maintain somewhat of a ceiling on the property taxes. And as you'll notice here, I don't know specifically if this is what Reba's alluding to, but then you've got $1.3 million going to the clinic. You're going to have X amount of dollars going to the school. These are all drawn out of sales tax, right? So the initial thought behind it, and this goes back many, many long before me, that allocation was initially to be specific to the school and to subsidize costs there. And ultimately, as we started getting our fair share, instituting sales tax on tours and transportation and so forth, sales tax grew, gave us more flexibility. But without getting into it, into a lot of depth about it, what it does do for us is it creates a lot of flexibility, number one, but more importantly, it also speaks to quality of life. And you think about quality of life, and it may be a rec center, it may be a pool, it may be maintaining trails, but it also may be absorbing the cost of bear-proof cans. It can be subsidizing the clinic to a certain level. It can be subsidizing the school, certainly at all cost. And then certainly buying down the mill rate so that we have property tax levels that are not directly impacted immediately by the tourism influx that we have, which generates those high property assessments. So I think you need to keep that in mind. I think we all need to keep that in mind. I don't mind the idea of $5 a can for, having a little bit of skin in the, the community attempt to reduce any, God forbid, any, bad situations from really coming to pass as far as bears roaming around town is concerned. But at the same time, just raising garbage rates just for the sake of raising garbage rates because we need bear cans or because the rates haven't been increased in a while or whatever that side of the discussion or debate is, has to be weighed against what is on the other side of that discussion, which is quality of life. I have low water sewer garbage rates in Skagway. I have low property tax. I have a nice clinic. I have a great school, and these things are being subsidized by that fund. It's adding to my quality of life. I may not use the rec center maybe as often as somebody else, or if we had a pool, maybe I would or wouldn't swim, whatever it may be. But collectively, the quality of life comes in a lot of different fashions. And if you go through your budget all the way through in its entirety, you're seeing transfers from sales tax for that. So I'm preemptively saying that so that possibly we have a discussion in the very near future about where we should be on levels of property on sales tax and what our targets are for that. how we should go about it quarter by quarter, and what we're trying to do with that money, besides stay ahead of the curve, which we're being pressed at, you know, each and every budget cycle. And thank God at this point, we are one of the few communities that has a carryover. We don't run at a deficit. That's good. But so I think we need to have that discussion sooner rather than later, because it plays into really the scope of work that the city manager has to do with all these moving parts that we have going on in town, taking over the port, and we continually want to expand on solid waste, and whether we're shipping stuff out, whatever we're doing to be a better community. It certainly would, I think, help the city manager in his challenges and the rest of the staff in their challenges. But hopefully we can have that discussion sooner rather than later, maybe next meeting.
Thank you, Dan. Sam.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. I agree with Reba that we are spending an enormous amount of money at the clinic for kind of in our Band-Aid approach to. And I agree also that that's not sustainable, but we're keeping the doors open, and I hope that in the very near future we can have a more financially stable option for the clinic, because that is an extraordinary amount. That I think is just not feasible for us to continue to pay, or just to expect the taxpayers in general to continue to subsidize. The clinic should be somewhat self-sustaining. I don't assume it's fully self-sustaining, but somewhat better than 1.3, 1.5 million. Bear-proof cans. I'm on the fence on bear-proof cans. I know it's a safety issue when I keep bears out of town, but you know, to continually raise and kind of assumedly a required raise. A required use of the bear cans, you know, throughout the public, with that required raise and rate, to mitigate an issue that, you know, I just hope the issue is concerning enough to do that and move forward. I still want to see how that shakes out with the at Public Works, but otherwise, I thank the manager and the staff for all their hard work on putting the budget together. Thank you, and that's all I have.
Thank you, Sam. Mayor Cremata.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. Thanks again to staff and the manager for putting so much work into tonight's presentation. Just a couple of things. I want to echo what Dan said. We're dealing with quality of life issues, and oftentimes we don't think of things like bear cans or subsidies for daycare or subsidies for a clinic as quality of life issues, but these are things that do improve our quality of life in Skagway substantially. We live in a challenging community, and these are things that, you know, we have identified as a community that we need. And I know I get a little bit of heartache as somebody who doesn't have children when we're putting quite a bit of money into programs that benefit families, but we look at it objectively as a whole and say these things benefit the community. That being said, I have grave concerns about this clinic budget. I see an increase of 16% when we've been promised repeatedly by clinic board that we weren't going to see these kind of increases. And I think we all knew at the table that that's not realistic. Are we going to subsidize a clinic? And what dollar amount are we going to subsidize it to? I think that's a question we need to tackle at the table at some point, because we're not going to have this $560,000 grant on next year's clinic budget. I have a lot of heartache looking at salaries of around $170,000 for people that do not live in Skagway. You add housing, travel expenses. These are $200,000 a year salaries for people that are contributing to the community, of course, as employees of the clinic, but they're essentially strangers. And whether or not they stay, well, you know, we can say that they're going to love it here and it's a great place to live. And boy, howdy, they're definitely going to stay, but that hasn't happened. And I don't think that's realistic. So I have a lot of headache about this budget. And I want to express that now, because I do think as an assembly, whether or not it gets approved at this budget cycle, probably will. But we need to figure out, you know, what's the acceptable cap? Are we willing to put 10%, 20%, 50% of our general fund sales tax budget money into the clinic, we're going to have the school coming at us. We all agree at the table we're going to fund the school to the cap. They're also going to be looking for probably about $450,000 in money for travel expenses like they've done in years past. I want to be able to approve that. I know everybody at the table does as well. These are for the children that are traveling, who live in our community year-round, whose families have proven that they're year-round residents of our community. But if we're going to fund a clinic to these types of levels, we have to look at where the money is going to be cut. And I'd rather not cut it out of school budget. So again, just going to say it one more time, three times is the charm. We need to look at how much we are willing to fund anything, what kind of percentage we want to take out of the general fund budget. Dan's right. We need to look at our sales tax revenue. We need to look how to increase it to improve quality of life. But if we're ever going to have a rec center expansion, a pool, or any of these other things that we've identified as a community that would improve our quality of life, we're going to have to be realistic about the amount of money we're spending on healthcare in a community where a lot of people won't go to the clinic. And I don't say that as a reflection on the people who work at the clinic. They do a fantastic job. I'm just saying it so that we can realistically figure out how we're going to budget for what are going to be substantial cost increases for healthcare in Skagway over the next 5 to 10 years. Realistic increases. I'm here in DC. We met today with Kristen Omarosa, Supervisory Legislative Affairs Specialist for the Maritime Administration at the U.S. Department of Transportation. I was accompanied by lobbyist John Walsh. We had a great meeting, just a fantastic person with a lot of game. We were trying to sell our community. We obviously have a $12 million or close to $12 million grant for the roll-on, roll-off dock that we're trying to get. It's a highly competitive grant. There's a small pool of money, but was very encouraged to hear that Murkowski's office was going to bat for us. So yeah, we've had a good time here. It's been tiring, exhausting, but we'll be leaving tomorrow morning, and I will be calling in tomorrow for the meeting. It's 11 p.m. here, but shouldn't be too much of a problem. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Mayor. Thanks again to staff for preparing these budgets. This is the nuts and bolts of how our government works and functions on a day-to-day basis. Dan, we absolutely need to have this discussion about the sales tax mill rate. I think since that percentage was set, we have more services, we've have more infrastructure that's built, we have more tourism probably than was at that time. So we need to re-examine that mill rate, because we have more demand on the sales tax fund as each year passes. And thanks everybody. Okay, Jay, go ahead.
I just wanted to throw out, Thomas, you're a smart guy. You understand that we weren't attacking you and your performance there. In fact, I would argue that your salary is worth it for what you stepped into and what you've been dealing with and how you've turned it around so far. As far as I've heard, I haven't heard any complaints, any new complaints of the clinic. And I would also like to just point out, a part of the problem that the clinic has is the assembly and what we've done and how we've done it and how we've progressed with the entire search thing and not giving them the ability to correct themselves. And I just wanted to throw that out there. Thanks.
Thanks, Jay. I'll go back to this number, 750,000 tourists for next year. I think we all recognize that is not where, you know, CLIA has been projecting our numbers to be for quite some time. But I think that is a stable number that businesses can plan on. We're working pretty hard to have a agreement with White Pass, so that we don't have any stall outs with permitting. We know how to proceed. That it will be a hotly debated item tomorrow night. But I think we can probably also understand from the business community perspective that it's significantly less than that. We're in deep trouble. I, you know,
from a municipal staff budgeting standpoint, from individual owners, from people looking to have seasonal jobs or second jobs, we do very much depend on cruise tourism. And it's something that's on the forefront of every one of our minds here. And I know it is in City Hall as well. And, you know, this is something from this rock slide, it's put this whole community on its head. And I know the Port Department is working very hard to try to figure out solutions so that we can get there and move, you know, I'm going to say it's laterally, because it's we're having to shift things around from, you know, the stability we've seen from more than 50% of our tourism come in to the railroad dock. And that's very much in jeopardy going forward. And we don't have an easy solution in sight of how to mitigate a falling mountain. But I think that this is, you know, a lot of this is fairly, it's probably more conservative than I probably would have projected. So I think a lot of these budgets, you know, probably look really skinny, but it could be better. I think, you know, the manager is not, and the treasurer have not put us in a place to fail rather than tighten our belts. And then if it's better, that's good. So I appreciate that conservative aspect on our budgets. You know, things are more expensive. We see that across the board, from the grocery store to salaries to, you know, milk and gasoline across the board. So I, you know, still hear a criticism of $5 wage increase. And, you know, as an employer, I have to face that as well. But I think it ultimately was probably the right move. And, you know, we're seeing it in every one of these budgets that, you know, salaries are up. But I still think that probably was the correct move for us to make as an assembly. Because if we don't have quality people in these departments and we don't retain quality people, you know, then you're trying to train new people and fill positions. And we're starting, you know, from the bottom up again. And we have a great staff. With that, this meeting is adjourned.